While you are busy enjoying your lunch, while you are busy having some time from 1300 hours, take time and listen to OTR News Bulletin.
On the radio news analysis, we go beyond the headlines. We don't just tell you what's happening. We ask why it's happening, how it affects ordinary Namibians, and what it means for the country's future. We examine the structures behind news, connect policy to people's lived realities, and bring in expert voices to make sense of where Namibia is heading.
You want to get into touch with global governance,
let's express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of faith.
This is actually to put it mildly, an economic scandal. Not a fraud, it's a scandal. Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. Mm. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past. Mm. And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
A very good afternoon, Namibia, and welcome to On The Reading News Analysis right here on your number one talk radio station. Of course, today is the 27th of January, 2025, and the time is 6 minutes past the hour of 1300 hours. We're just getting started again with yet another news bulletin, as we usually do, and bring you news right here on The Reader News Analysis. Now, as the country enters a new week, it is Tuesday, of course, we already now navigating into this new week. Namibia does soar against the backdrop of renewed focus, rising public expectations, and sustained scrutiny of decision-making at all levels of society. Now, across government institutions, communities, and households, conversations continue around service delivery, economic pressures, infrastructure reliability, and the quality of leadership shaping daily life. Now, issues of governance and accountability remain firmly in the spotlight, alongside concerns around economic resilience, food and water security, public safety, and community well-being. Now, these matters continue to influence public confidence and define the direction of national discourse as the year unfolds. Now, on the Reading News Analysis, we remain your platform where the news is not only reported, but placed into context. Here, we examine national and regional developments beyond the headlines, exploring their implications and relevance for ordinary Namibians. Now, through our live broadcast, and that is our Eagle FM website or the Eagle FM app and other digital platforms, we bring you timely updates on current affairs, politics, business, health, agriculture, technology, and community issues, keeping you informed and engaged wherever you are. From 1300 hours to 1430 Monday through Friday, we deliver credible journalism, informed perspectives, and thoughtful analysis grounded in the realities facing the nation. Now, today's agenda, of course, we would look into key developments shaping the start of the week, including pressures within public service delivery, emerging economic signals, evolving agriculture and water security challenges, of course, issues that matters and issues of community concern, and what the strains may indicate for the days ahead. So tune in all Eagle FM, through all Eagle FM frequencies, stream us live via the Eagle FM app, and stay connected by subscribing to our WhatsApp channel for breaking news, audience polls, and ongoing conversations. And now let's get right into this news bulletin. Namibia has recorded a trade deficit of 4.4 billion Namibian dollars in November 2025 as the country's imports continued to exceed exports, according to the Namibia International Merchandise Trade Statistics Bulletin. Now, during the month under review, that is November 2025, exports were valued at 10.0 billion Namibian dollars, while imports stood at 14.4 billion Namibian dollars, a difference of 4.4 billion Namibian dollars. Now, export earnings declined by 24.5% compared to October 2025 and by 15.9% when compared to November 2024. Imports also decreased, falling by 10.4% month on month and 16.7% year on year. South Africa remained Namibia's largest export destination, accounting for 29.3% of total exports, followed by France with a share of 12.4%. Now, China, Zambia, and Botswana completed the list of the country's top five export markets. On the import side, South Africa continued to dominate as Namibia's main source of import, contributing 39.7%, while Italy, Oman, and Zambia were also among the top five import partners. Now, analysis of exports by commodity shows that non-monetary gold was the leading export product in November 2025, accounting for 21.1% of total exports. Now, this was followed by uranium at 19.9%. Other major export products include precious stones, diamonds, fish, fruit, and nuts. And Namibia still exports raw materials to outside countries. Of course, yeah, we're making money out of this, not as much as we would if we were doing value addition to those products. Now, in terms of imports, petroleum oils were the most imported commodity, representing 16.0% of total imports. Motor vehicles for commercial purposes ranked second with a share of 3.7%. Other significant imported products included nickel ores and concentrates, fertilizers and ores and concentrates of base metals. By economic blocks, the South African Customs Union, that is SACU, emerged as Namibia's largest export market, accounting for 38.9% of total exports. Now, this was followed by the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development countries at 27.8% and the European Union at 23.1%. BRICS Plus countries accounted for 15.5%, while SADC, excluding SACU, contributed 13.6% of export earnings. Now, then on the import side, SACU remained the largest source of Namibia's imports, contributing 40.5% of the total import value. While the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, that is OECD, and BRICS Plus followed with shares of 18.7% and 18.6% respectively. Now, the EU accounted for 13.0%, while COMESA contributed 6.5%. Regarding modes of transport, the majority of exports were transported by sea, accounting for 38.8% of export value, followed by air transport at 34.6% and road transport at 26.6%. Now, on the import side, road transport dominated, accounting for 62.8% of total import value, followed by sea transport at 33.4% and air transport at 3.8%. Now, under the African Continental Free Trade Area framework, Namibia was a net importer during November 2025, indicating that the country imported more goods from African countries than it exported to them. Now, in trade related to food items and beverages, Namibia recorded a trade surplus of 291 million Namibian dollars in food items during the month, while beverages registered a trade deficit of 251 million Namibian dollars. Meanwhile, an analysis of rice, identified as the commodity of the month, showed that Namibia imported rice valued at 31 million Namibian dollars, mainly from Thailand and South Africa. No rice exports were recorded during November 2025.
The Namibia Statistics Agency has just released the International Merchandise Trade Statistics Bulletin. That is for the month of November 2025, whereby Namibia's trade balance stood at a deficit of 4.4 billion. Now, this development reflects a worsened trade balance when compared to a 2.9 billion deficit recorded a month earlier. Further analysis shows a 5.5 billion deficit recorded year on year.
And of course, let's pause here now. This is On the Reading News Analysis. We'll be back with more.
Lipura nenge no wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maundu tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku tete opoye ekukurile. Oshafa fana nongeshe faili mehola mo ihewe tike kovano ile koshiwana. Onongeshe faa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa. Nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe faa omarudi dayo loka. Opone ushendi fenawa nokumona oijamo ili nawa. Ninge fata fano na Monica ko Eagle FM. Onore tatuimwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ile ko berewa vura hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu oma felane Eagle FM. The eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. Now, of course, it is Wednesday, it is Tuesday, and that means that Monday's The Villager e-paper is still available for your reading and your knowledge. Now, do get hold of the copy, remember, all you have to do is send a text message to 081-200-4144 and read up on social economic news covered in The Villager newspaper of Monday's edition. Be on the lookout also for The Villager e-papers edition of Wednesday as it comes out tomorrow. Now moving on to other news. The Ministry of Environment, Forestry and Tourism is holding a public consultation in Swakopmund today on the proposed sand and gravel mining regulations under the Environmental Management Act of 2007, Act Number 7 of 2007 Amendment Bill. Now the consultation comes amid growing concerns over the environmental impact of unregulated sand and gravel mining, particularly in ecologically sensitive areas such as riverbeds, wetlands and coastal zones. Now, increased demand from Namibia's construction and infrastructure sectors has led to a rise in extraction activities, prompting calls for stronger oversight and regulation. Let's take a listen. Going to speak to us now, listen to Pandoleni Haindongo, who is heading or is in the environmental department in the Ministry of Environment.
Pandoleni Haindongo, under the Department of Environmental Affairs, and I'll be taking us through the elements that we as a ministry have come up to form what will become the regulations for sand and gravel mining. So we'll have the overview, the challenges, impacts, and then we'll look at the different elements that we have so far, and then we'll open the floor for inputs and discussions. So when it comes to sand and gravel mining, the ministry continues to observe an unprecedented level or scale of sand mining in Namibia, and this activity has caused destruction not only to the environment, but it has also caused loss of livelihoods in communities. And it has also had an impact on development projects and infrastructure. So lives have been lost, especially when in the news, sometimes you hear of incidences of drowning. They do not give the full details, but some of the culprits come from these sand mining pits. And the Office of the Environmental Commissioner, with support from other law enforcement agencies, have been able to manage to close off a number of illegal sites where sand mining activities were being carried out. And in collaboration with stakeholders such as the Roads Authority, the ministry has been able to rehabilitate some of those pits, which some of them are dating to pre-independence. So some of them have been really old and just abandoned without any rehabilitation. So the government, through the Ministry of Environment, as indicated through the previous presentation, we are trying to come up with stand-alone regulations as part of the EMMA bill to effectively regulate and manage sand and gravel mining activities in the country. And we have arrived at this position because of the outcry and also because of what we have observed happening within the country, the complaints, the conflict. If you've been following the news, especially the past 5 years, the impacts of this sand extraction activities are out of control and they need to be managed nationwide. Therefore, once adopted, these regulations will put in place strict measures that we hope they will provide for, if followed, that they will provide and guide proper structure for sand and gravel mining. And the regulations will also ensure that culprits are held and punished according to the law. So what are the key challenges that we are facing with, we are faced with when we are talking about sand and gravel mining activities? So most of these activities are taking place without the approval of the Environmental Commissioner's Office. So it means most of these activities are not cleared with an ECC to take place. And this problem gets worse when you look at communal areas. And then we also have the fact that traditional authorities, who are the custodians in most of these communal areas, have limited capacity to either obtain ECCs or to manage the environmental clearance certificates for those sand mining activities. So inability to control miners through the enforcement of the laws in the communal areas, poor enforcement of the conditions that were issued on those ECCs. And then in some cases, we find that traditional authorities are also involved in the illegal mining activities themselves. And this is where the next point comes in. They often come to this point because of the bribes and corruption that is taking place for businesses to essentially succeed. And then the other challenge we face with sand mining is the lack of understanding of mandates and responsibilities by individuals. So if we say, for example, in this specific area, who has the mandate to obtain the ECC to do sand mining extraction? So if it's on a private farm, who does it? Is it the farm owner or is it the company that wants to do the sand mining activities, if it's not the owner of the farm that wants to do those activities? So these are all places where mandates and responsibilities need to be clarified. And then the lack of understanding of different rights in the communal land. So this is now according to the customary rights. When you were issued that piece of land, what does your leasehold say? What activities are you supposed to take are you supposed to undertake with that piece of land? So if you got it for agricultural purposes and you have a piece of land that you are now doing extraction of sand, it means you are doing something that is not according to the lease that you are holding. So this also needs to be clarified and understood by different holders of leases and landowners. And then we also now find the challenge that due to business reasons, most of the operators want to mine near towns so that they reduce transport costs. You mine here, you deliver here, it's a fast operation compared to mining at a site that is far from town. And these areas, essentially we do not have these areas. We do not have areas around towns where we can do sand mining activities. Or if we look at the Namibian map, this represents the land tenure systems, including the water or the rivers, perennial and ephemeral rivers. And this is just to indicate that on all these types of land tenures, we have sand mining activities that are taking place. If it's, be it in national parks, in protected areas where people want to do road maintenance, then for safety reasons, you do not want trucks coming in and out of the park. So you are identifying an area from the park that you have to extract that sand to maintain your roads. In communal areas, in commercial areas, in rivers, in all these areas, we have sand mining that is taking place. And the impacts, as we have observed, so as I mentioned, one of the challenges is that we've had sand mining activities leading to the destruction of infrastructure, for example. So here we have a national power line that is now left hanging on the edge due to sand mining activities. So it's not only this, but other infrastructures are also compromised because of continued sand mining activities in those areas, which have not been regulated and have led to impacts such as that. And then loss of livelihoods. If you see where the person's field or portion of land is, it means this person eventually, erosion will lead to the fence collapsing. If it's an agricultural piece of land, then this person is losing this livelihood. They need to move somewhere else. And then here we see the impact of unrehabilitated. So you have barren land that becomes useless per se, because if it was agricultural land, if it was grazing land, whatever land it was, it's no longer productive and it's just left the way it is. And then these are demonstrations of agricultural lands. So these are communal areas where you have cases of pollution that, or like the land has been degraded to the value that it's no longer useful after sand mining has taken place. And in some cases, you find that after the operations are done, broken equipment are also just left there. And then, of course, under the mandate of the Ministry of Agriculture, under their Water Act, as alluded to by the DEC, is where we have the control of sand mining in water bodies. But it's not in all water bodies that it's controlled. So you have, for example, in floodplains where it's unregulated and it's uncontrolled, and it leads to this. And these are now the things that will lead to drowning, loss of lives, and unmitigated impacts that are, for example, changing courses of water, how the water channels are flowing and so forth. And then we have those issues of legacy sites that were mined in a long time. They have not been rehabilitated, or people, once they have finished the resource, they just leave the pits looking like that, and nobody knows or takes responsibility to essentially mitigate or rehabilitate the impacts of sand mining in those areas. And this is what some of them look like. If you see, there's a truck tipper there, like part of what used to carry the thing, people, you can see the activities have ceased already, but the pits just remain the way they are. And so, we will move on to now the development of these sand and gravel mining regulations. So, these regulations will be developed under the Environmental Management Act of 2007, Section 56, read together with Section 29A. So this Section 56 is the one that gives the minister the powers to essentially develop regulations under the Act. And then Section 29 is the one that talks about listed activity, the powers of the minister to either change, to add, to remove, to, as Mr. Hiskia say, if we are looking at the listed activities and we are separating them into A and B, that is all within the powers of the minister as indicated in the Act in those sections. So this will provide a legal framework to regulate the extraction of sand and gravel in Namibia. And the aim is to prevent environmental degradation, to protect sensitive ecosystems such as rivers and wetlands, and also to promote responsible resource use and sustainable development. As we said, the ministry is not trying to stop development. We are trying to ensure that the mandate is kept to ensure that development is done in a sustainable way. And so, these regulations should also introduce requirements for environmental clearance, permits, or the permitting system, how to manage the site for sand and gravel extraction, the rehabilitation thereof of that piece of land where you are doing sand and mining, sand and gravel extraction, and then compliance and monitoring while balancing economic development needs with environmental protection for sustainable development. And then what we also want to achieve with these regulations is to have clear defined roles and responsibilities. Who is undertaking the activity? Who is applying for the ECC? Who is issuing the permit in this area? Who is the competent authority? So that needs to be clarified for all the land tenure systems, not only in communal areas, but in all the areas, all parts of Namibia. And then we also then want, once we have clarified that, want to introduce fines and penalties as well as prosecution procedures that all the stakeholders that are involved in this can follow. If it's a traditional authority, what can they do in their part? If it's environmental officers in the regions, what role can they play? If it's traditional authorities or somebody, farm owners, all this, what can we all do? And then the next section will be looking at the draft provisions. So now these are the elements that we are opening up to you for deliberations, for you to look at, consider, and give input based on your expertise, experiences, and knowledge.
Now, according to the ministry, the proposed regulations aim to establish clearer licensing procedures to strengthen environmental compliance requirements and introduce monitoring mechanisms in order to ensure that sand and gravel mining is conducted in a sustainable and environmentally responsible manner. Pardon me. Now, the amendments are also intended to address regulatory gaps that have allowed illegal or poorly managed mining operations to continue in some areas. The public consultations provides an opportunity for community members, mining operators, environmental experts, local authorities, traditional leaders, and civil society organizations to engage directly with policymakers and submit input Okay. That will inform the finalization of the regulations. Now, the ministry has reiterated that public participation is a key requirement under the Environmental Management Act, ensuring that development activities strike a balance between economic growth, environmental protection, and community well-being, as communities usually tend to understand those things better, and their inputs are always sometimes their input is something that was not thought of before by the ministry itself. Now, land and sand mining regulations in Namibia are definitely crucial to balance economic development with environmental protection. The country has laws in place, such as the Environmental Management Act of 2007, which requires an environmental clearance certificate, or an ECC, for any mining activity. This certificate ensures that mining operations don't harm the environment or local communities. Now, key regulations are the environmental clearance certificate, which is required for all mining activities, including sand and gravel mining, environmental impact assessment, which must be conducted before the environmental clearance certificate is issued, the Minerals Act, which regulates mining rights, license holder obligations, and environmental protection, and then the Local Authorities Act, which empowers municipalities to regulate waste, building standards, and levy service charges. Now, those regulations are very necessary as they prevent environmental degradation, erosion, and water pollution. They also protect the local communities, the wildfire and infrastructure, and they ensure sustainable development and responsible mining practices, also by enforcing accountability and rehabilitation of mined areas. Now, one thing I came to realize is that even after an environment has been mined, there also has to be a rehabilitation of that particular area. Now, the Ministry of Environment, Forestry and Tourism is working to strengthen those regulations and enforcement, including regional stakeholder engagements on sand and gravel mining regulations. Hence why they are doing this public consultations in order to amend or to make adjustments for the proposed sand and gravel mining regulations under the Management Act. But let's take a listen still to Panduleni Haindongo of the Ministry of Environment, Forestry and Tourism.
Panduleni Haindongo under the Department of Environmental Affairs. And I'll be taking sand and gravel extraction, and then compliance and monitoring while balancing economic development needs with environmental protection for sustainable development. And then commercial extraction, this is now where the client who is doing that is the one that is holding that, because traditional authority will have an ECC for the pit, which obviously has a huge capacity, where they'll be extracting more than 5 cubic meters, and it warrants them to hold an ECC. Next. And then the institutions involved and their mandates. So MEFT here will oversee the implementation of the regulations, approves the applications for these environmental clearance certificates, and issues those ECCs to the applicants. And then we'll also then be responsible for monitoring compliance to the conditions of those environmental clearance certificates. Traditional authorities in communal areas will be able to apply for an environmental clearance certificate. They will receive and approve short-term permits for applications by the operators. So the traditional authority gets the ECC, and then based on the capacity of their pit, they give permits to different operators who want to extract that, the sand from there. So then they will be able to issue those permits and then enforce the conditions on their ECCs to see that they themselves and the operators on that pit are abiding to the conditions of the ECC. And then they will collect the levies according to their ECCs. and we'll talk about levies later. And then they will also be responsible for the rehabilitation, because if you are now collecting the levies, it means you are putting some of it away to ensure that the cost of rehabilitation will be covered when those operations are ceasing. Then we have local authorities. So in municipal areas, they will also be able to apply for ECCs, receive and approve short-term permit applications by other operators. So if it's a pit that is licensed for said mining and it's under the local authority, then they can also have operators on their pit that they can regulate by issuing them with a permit. And then they will also ensure that compliance with the conditions of the ECCs are met, and they will be the inspectors. So instead of MEFT coming to inspect the pit for Swakopmund Municipality, Swakopmund Municipality will take that responsibility up as part of the conditions of their ECCs for undertaking this activity or holding the certificate for this pit. And then they will also be able to collect the levies and be able to, be responsible for the rehabilitation of that pit. And then in communal areas, leaseholders will be able to apply for ECCs, then ensure the compliance of the conditions with those ECCs, and then also ensure rehabilitation of those pits once activities have ceased. So for private landowners, they should be able to apply for ECCs, comply with the conditions of the ECC, and then enter into bilateral agreements with operators for gravel and mining of sand. And then they will also be responsible for extraction. So here is where I was giving the example of the farm. So if you as a farm owner know that there's an area or you're interested, there's a party that is involved in doing extraction on your farmland, then you get the ECC, you comply, you ensure compliance with those conditions, and then you are allowed under that ECC to say, I am the holder of the ECC, but these are the operators that will be coming on my farm to extract sand, and you are regulating or you are monitoring those ones. And at the end, when those activities are done, then you are the one that is responsible for the rehabilitation of that pit. And then for the application process, so these applications should undertake environmental assessments, so the scoping. These assessments should be done by qualified environmental practitioners. As now the EMA bill is saying, practitioners should be registered, they should be qualified, they should meet certain standards. So we should accept ECCs that are coming from practitioners that are on our list of registered environmental practitioners. And then one of the main issues is that consultations should be done, because that's also one of the issues that we've identified, and that's one of the issues that leads to bribery and corruption, for example. So you just identify a piece of land that is somewhere, let's say it's in a communal land, it's a grazing area, it's suitable for sand and mining, sand and gravel extraction. And then you go ahead, you speak to the traditional authority without consulting the community that grazes on that piece of land. So this should enable the public to be properly consulted.
Pespucia now for a scheduled commercial break.
Congratulations, you survived January. With USAVE's affordable combo, you're set for February too. For just 599 Namibian dollars, you can get 10 kilogram nice parboiled rice, 10 kilogram champion super maize meal, 10 kilograms of Pokoma fed cooked flour, 10 kilograms of marathon brown or white sugar. That's 599 Namibian dollars for 4 large bags of essential products. We all save at USAVE.
Yeah.
Okay, let's resume now where Pandoleni was talking about consulting or doing a seminar.
Pandoleni Haindongo under the Department of Environmental Affairs. And the conditions will be based on those specific sites. And in addition, they will indicate the amount. And then, once that is all in place, and then suspension and cancellation of ECCs and sand and gravel mining permits. So your permit or your ECC will be suspended or cancelled due to violation of the conditions that will be issued together with those ECCs. If you are causing environmental damage, if your activities for sand or gravel extraction, mining, are causing environmental damage, or if the public or the community raises concerns, valid concerns to those activities, or if you are issued with a permit or a certificate, ECC, that you do not use for 12 months. So you are issued an ECC today. Come January next year, the pit that you have been approved to do sand mining, nothing has been touched. It means you are taking chances, maybe. You are really not in need of that sand or the gravel that you have applied for. Authorities with powers, sand and gravel mining pit, these ones, the authorities responsible or the ones that will oversee those are the traditional authorities, the local authorities, and private landowners. And for the ECCs, as we said, is the Office of the Environmental Commissioner. So this takes off the pressure of now the Office of the Environmental Commissioner to be responsible for issuing the ECC and following it down all the way to the level of somebody that is just getting 10 cubic meters of sand. Because we cannot regulate from all the way to the top to the bottom. And then, sand and gravel mining permits can only be issued in respect to a specific borrowed pit with an ECC. So you cannot get a permit to go harvest sand, to go mine sand or gravel on a pit that doesn't have an ECC, even though a pit exists. If it doesn't have, then you cannot say, I have a permit, and that's why you are going to start a pit. You have to go back to the ECC. You have to start with the ECC. the management of borrow pits, within these regards, the regulations or the elements are looking at fencing off pits to control access and ensure security. And then sand and gravel loads recordings registry system to ensure that every load is registered in and out of the pit. And then setting up buffer or distances. So here we have a suggestion between 100 to 200 meters away from houses, schools, businesses, infrastructures that can be damaged by these activities. And then no protected trees should be cut down. And then the protection of endangered species. So we have a lot of biodiversity that is considered as endangered. So if your pit happens to be around one of those areas where you have an endangered animal or plant species, then it cannot go ahead. And then one of the issues is also to control dust. So dust control, dust suppression. And then separate roads from trucks and communities. So most of the roads in communities, you find that they are destroyed by trucks and equipment that are used for sand mining. And this is because, especially in the wet season, these trucks carry heavy loads, and they dig deeper into the ground. And this is mainly happening in areas where community roads are not under the custodian of anyone. So everybody is responsible for maintaining their roads, and hence the need to separate between community roads and the roads that these trucks should be using. This is just an example, a demonstration of what we would consider now if we are to say we are setting up a buffer zone of 100 or 200 meters to say, if you identify that area within the yellow polygons, to say that is where the area I've identified for my pit for sand mining, we now consider all the edges of this pit and say if it's now close, it's within 100 meters of a house, of a dwelling, of a business, of a power line, of whatnot, either you yourself need to adjust those margins, or we strictly just reject and say we are not issuing for this. Because if you take this, for example, either if you reduce the size, then it's no longer commercially viable to make that a sand mining pit. So those are the considerations that we will look at when we are now processing this application. Monitoring records and inspectors. So counting and recording of daily loads of sand or gravel. This goes together with the registry that is put in place. And then capturing of vehicle details and volumes form. So that's also to ensure that we have monitoring of what goes in and what comes out. And remember the conditions that we put there for the vehicle requirements. They must possess those permits. They must possess the ECCs so that you know you are authorized to harvest this amount of sand or gravel. And then the use of technology will be allowed to put up systems such as barcodes, for example, either for your permit, for your ECC, your truck, ICT systems or mobile apps that will enable us to have mobile tracking, for example. So the regulations will enable for the future setup of such systems that will make monitoring and record keeping easier and also online, digital. And then transportation and road safety. So permit holders must ensure that their vehicles that are transporting sand and gravel are in possession of an ECC or a sand mining permit at all times. Environmental officers, police officers, and road inspectors will fine, confiscate, open criminal cases against non-compliant culprits. Vehicles must be roadworthy and insured. No overloading will be allowed. So you take the load that you are supposed to carry on that vehicle. And then those drivers must be licensed drivers to ensure the safety. They must know what they are doing. And this is also one of the issues that we experience. Trucks must be covered to ensure that there is no spillage. Because if you are following a truck, for example, that is carrying gravel, you are driving behind this truck, you are both driving 80 kilometers per hour, the wind is blowing this gravel, it hits your windscreen, who do you ask? Sometimes you don't even know where, what hit you, where it came from. You have no means of saying it came from the truck. So to prevent such things, these loads need to be covered. And then repair of road damage in areas where the road is shared, that community track roads need to be repaired by trucks or miners that use those roads for transporting their sand and gravel loads. working hours. So setting up working hours for these sites. Weekdays from 8 to 5 and Saturdays 8 to 1. And then public holidays and Sundays not allowed without approval. So this is now based on the cases where sand and gravel activities are taking place. If you are applying for an exemption, maybe if it's roads authority that is working on a road and they do not want to increase the amount of time that they are they are what? They are working on the road just because of the rate at which they are getting these loads, then provision is made to allow them to do that. But if it's strictly for business purposes, then on days when people are also using those areas, so mostly weekends, kids are not in school, whatnot, people are trying to do other activities, then we try to limit sand mining activities. And also the movement of heavy loads, that you do not have trucks moving around on Sundays or on weekends when people are also trying to do other things. Health and safety requirements that the regulations are trying to put up. Permit holders must provide the necessary PPE and then dust masks to people that are doing those operations. The people that are doing sand mining should undergo safety training. There should be portable drinking water, accessible, and mobile toilets. This is because of what we observe happening on these pits. First aid kits, anti-venom kits. So you are digging, you have some snakes that are under the ground and they attack some of the people that are working there. So these are things that we need there. Accidents and incidences are happening there. And then emergency contact numbers need to be there for any sort of emergency, be it a fire, be it a health or safety emergency. You need to call an ambulance, the police, or whoever you need to call there. And then closure and restoration. Before closure, for you to say you are closing the site must be restored, rehabilitated, as per the conditions of the ECC and in line with the Section 48A of EMMA that stipulates the conditions for rehabilitation and restoration. And then the Environmental Commissioner may order rehabilitation at the ECC and permit holders' cost. So this is just to ensure that, as we mentioned, you as a traditional authority, as a private landowner, must be able to ensure that that pit is rehabilitated, it's restored, at the cost of what is coming out of there. Because you can no longer come and ask government roads authority to come and rehabilitate your pit while the gravel that or the sand that you have extracted has made money. Some of that money should go back into rehabilitating that pit. Offenses and penalties that the regulations will prescribe. Some of the offenses will be establishing a burrow pit without an ECC, undertaking sand and gravel mining without an ECC or sand and gravel mining permit, transportation of sand and gravel without an ECC or a permit, non-compliance with the conditions of the ECC or of the sand and gravel mining permit. And then the penalties that we are looking to develop are spot fines, confiscation of equipments, opening criminal cases, defining, setting the jail terms, and then ordering rectifications and rehabilitation at the culprit's costs. So these are some of the penalties that these regulations will make provision for. And then finally, we look at the levies and the fees. So the regulations will prescribe levies that will come with the ECCs and the permits based now on the different ownerships or the different issues under the conditions under which the ECC will be issued. Regulations will also prescribe aspects and requirements for the establishment and management of community trust accounts and funds, for the receipt of community benefits and proceeds from sand and mining activities in the area. So we are aware of how much these pits are generating in some of the areas, if you put it in monetary value. And if you look at areas where these are a common or a public resource, these communities need guidance, mechanisms for them to benefit from the proceeds that come from the sale of this sand and the gravel. And then there are currently irregularities when it comes to levies and fees, because we have observed this. It's the reason why we have challenges. We have unregistered activities taking place. And then the levies will be defined and prescribed as to levies to be paid to the traditional authorities, to the local authorities, based on the cubic meters extracted in those areas. And then the levies for administration and monitoring, and then the levies that are to be paid to the communities. So if you get a permit, there's an amount, and for those amounts, those levies will be now broken down as to this is what goes to this and this is what goes to that. And then the following fees will be end of these elements that we have, that we are proposing for the draft regulations.
And that was Pandolini Haindongo giving a thorough education on what goes, or what is behind this proposed sand and gravel mining regulations under the Environmental Management Act. And he is in the Environment Department, that is under the Ministry of Environment, Forestry and Tourism. Indeed, much has to be regulated for economic perseverance, economic for community perseverance, for land perseverance and regulation, so that companies don't just go ahead and do whatsoever that they intend to do for commercial benefits, but not for the country economic benefits in the long run. Special admission consideration undergraduate applicants. UNAM invites eligible Namibian applicants to apply for special admission consideration for selected undergraduate degree programs for 2026. Now, this applies to applicants who narrowly missed standard admission requirements but met the specified point thresholds and subject criteria. Admission under this category is conditional, and students must meet set academic conditions by the end of the year to continue their studies. Special admission does not apply to professional or diploma programs. Details are available from the Office of the Registrar, that is the University of Namibia. Let's pause here now, take a trip to the marketplace. We'll be back with economic indicators and followed by news beyond the borders of Namibia. Stay with us.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa Eva Tero ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku dite opoye ekukurile oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana onongeshe faa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe faa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendi fenawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa ninge pata fanona Monica ko Eagle FM onore tatuimwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile kumberewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu matatu o mafilane Eagle FM the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM,
My friend, why do you seem so...
Enough for news beyond the borders. But before we get to that, economic indicators. Now, $1 today is equals to 16.00 Namibian dollars. £1 is equals to 20.64 Namibian dollars. £1 sterling is equals to 21.93 Namibian dollars. And €1 is equals to 19.01 Namibian dollars. One Botswana pula is equals to 1.22 Namibian dollars. Now let's move over to news beyond the borders of Namibia. Let's start off in South Africa, where the Member of Parliament Health Department has deployed 25 permanent medical doctors.
Matsulo Clinic, catering for hundreds of patients daily in this fast-growing township. Patients are often referred to hospitals far away. A costly exercise.
Maybe we will go to Rob's, they say come tomorrow. The problem, it will be the transport, the money, where are you going to get money to go to Rob's every day? So bringing the doctor here, it will be easier, better for us. The thing that you are crying for, build a big clinic for us, because this one is too small and they must add staff.
The challenge is we don't have a lot of nurses here, shortages of nurses. Also, the resources, some days you come in here and there's a shortage of pills. I think it's a great thing that so we'll have an access to this doctor every day and every hour that we need him.
To ease the burden of traveling long distances for health care, the health department will be deploying 25 doctors across the province's rural clinics, which operate 24 hours a day. The department hopes this will strengthen the primary health care in those areas, while reducing hospital referrals, queues, and the spread of diseases.
We can be able to practice what we call preventative medicine before, in fact, the disease takes its course. Because now when we are in a hospital, we're dealing with complications. But if you are in the community, you are able to speak to the community, especially if you are from around, and also the follow-up, because PHC is more of family medicine. And one of the pillars of family medicine is the treating doctor should be part of the community so that you can understand what's affecting them, so that you can bring the change, or you can bring the difference that they need. And it becomes easier if I treat one patient maybe longer, because it's easy for me to follow up.
They were trained in the main on primary health care. So we believe that that would be very good investment when you take them back to the clinic, where we are saying in preparation for the national health insurance, we must make sure that preventative measures and treatment at the level of a primary health care, that's what we're strengthening and making sure that we improve in terms of making sure that our people no longer go to hospital because they are treated there, they are screened earlier, and when they need treatment, they get treatment as early as possible in the comfort of the vicinity where they are coming from.
The doctors will work weekdays. Dumela Machego, SABC News, Matsulo.
Now in South Africa, a heat wave is expected today to the 30th of January.
The weather desk. Again, and a warm welcome to the weather desk. Take a look at our weather for today, but we're going to start with beautiful pictures and sent through by you. One sent through by Mteza from the East London, Eastern Cape. Cloudy conditions over this area. We move on to KwaZulu-Natal. We're seeing fine conditions, some haze over those areas, and this picture was seen through by Ntlaga Cele. And lastly, from Kimberley, the Northern Cape, fine conditions, that's sent through by Sheikhs. Remember, in the Northern Cape, we still have a heat wave warning, and this is mainly for the central and the eastern parts. Persistently high temperatures are expected into last from today into the 30th. This will stretch to the western half of the Eastern Cape, covering the Free State, as well as the southern parts of the Northwest. Do remember to drink your water and keep hydrated. Avoid direct sunlight, especially over those areas in the eastern parts of the Northern Cape. Take breaks whilst you're working, especially if you have to work outside. Now, let's get to our weather forecast for today. A 30% chance of showers and thunder showers is expected to the eastern parts of the Northern Cape. This will cover the Northwest into the Free State, as well as the western half of the Eastern Cape. A 60% chance of showers and thunder showers is expected for the eastern half of the Eastern Cape into the eastern parts of the Free State, as well as covering the southern parts of Gauteng and the southern areas of KwaZulu-Natal later in the afternoon. The South African Weather Service has issued a yellow level 2 warning for severe thunderstorms. These conditions are expected to result in heavy downpours that may lead to localized flooding, a possibility of damaging winds, as well as a possibility of hail and excessive lightning. These conditions are expected to the southern parts of the Northwest, covering the eastern parts of the Free State, as well as the western areas of KwaZulu-Natal, and not leaving out the southern parts of Gauteng. Do remember that these conditions may result in more of damaging winds as well as hail later in the afternoon into the evening, so do take caution around those areas. For the southwestern interior, dry conditions are expected. Weather conditions conducive for felt fires. These are expected to the central and the eastern parts of the Northern Cape. This will also cover the northern parts just north of Upington. So if you see any unnecessary fires, report them to your necessary authorities. Hot conditions are expected into the afternoon. Upington will peak at 40 degrees. It will be hot in Gauteng, Pretoria with a maximum of 33, 32 in Musina. Into the southwestern parts, DR will peak at a maximum of 36 degrees. For tomorrow, hot conditions are still expected into the eastern parts, as well as covering the central interior. Kimberley will peak at a maximum of 38 degrees. A 60% chance of showers and thunder showers is expected to the eastern parts of the country tomorrow. This will cover the eastern half of the Eastern Cape into the Free State, as well as covering the southwestern parts of Mpumalanga. Otherwise, there is a 30% chance of showers and thunder showers. Very hot conditions are still expected into the western interior. Once we get to Thursday, seeing that band of showers and thunder showers having a higher chance of happening for the central parts into the eastern areas. This will cover the Free State, Gauteng, as well as stretching into the northwest. Very hot conditions expected in the western half. And that's it for my weather. Do stay tuned.
Let's move over now to Zambia as Zambia awaits IMF decision on credit facility.
Global finance heavyweights from Morgan Stanley, JP Morgan, Artisan Partners, SquarePoint, and Millennium Capital are now backing Zambia's economic turnaround. They say the country has moved from debt distress to stability and is now positioned for growth. The global investment firms declared Zambia a standout frontier market during high-level talks with President Hakainde Hichilema at State House. Head Frontier Markets Ayomide Mejabi says Zambia has been outstanding in frontier markets post-debt restructuring among emerging markets.
I look at all of frontier markets within emerging markets. And from my seat, you know, I compare Zambia to all other frontier markets, not only in Africa. And, you know, I echo my colleagues and peers' comments that Zambia has been a standout post-restructuring.
JP Morgan Africa chief economist Bolani Taiwo said the World Bank has commended Zambia's reforms over the last 5 years under President Hichilema's administration.
Over the past 4 or 5 years, we've been through, you know, the process of the restructuring and now the recovery as well. Earlier this morning, we had a brief meeting with the World Bank just very quickly, and they were very complimentary of the reforms that have taken place over the last 4 years. 5 years now, you know, under your administration. So well done and thank you for the great work.
At the heart of the confidence is Zambia's debt restructuring and IMF-backed reform program. President Hichilema says the country has cleared the biggest obstacle to growth, the external debt.
Tomorrow the IMF board is meeting, but we already, as you know, have achieved the staff level agreement, which really is a prelude to the board approval. We believe there will be no issues at the board, and we'll have concluded our program with the IMF by end of tomorrow, we believe the board will approve our program. And that also underscores the commitment that this government has for the reform program. So because it is important to achieve our growth agenda. We want to continue with the benefits that we have achieved, the debt restructuring, basically harvest from the heavy reforms we've had. And seeking growth, more growth, we believe that we can achieve more growth than we are projecting ourselves.
Mining is now the engine of the next phase, as President Hichilema has set a bold target to triple copper production.
3 million tons of copper, very clear, and we think that our psychological mark of 1 million tons will be broken, and then we'll be on the run towards 3 million tons. With the prices that are looking good, you all know the projections. So we think that this country will be sitting in a different space in a couple of years from now. And to do that for us is not just singing the songs. This government took a very serious agenda towards reconstructing the mines. A lot of assets were in comatose, if I may say that. They're really not doing well at all. So we brought back assets that were out of production for 47 years. Kalengwa mine, for example, out of production for 47 years is back. 28 shaft, we call it, was out of production for 23 years. We brought it back.
In the energy sector, the president informed investors that energy security is at the center of Zambia's growth plan.
We're pushing solar, other forms, clean coal technologies. Without energy, reliable, stable energy, you cannot expand the economy. So we're targeting 10,000 megawatts of energy in the next couple of years, which is really 10 gigawatts. That still, we believe, is not sufficient, but we'll keep on investing in there. And we believe in the next 3 years or so, rain or no rain, we still have enough energy. And that's important for an economy.
President Hichilema also urged global markets to lower risk premiums on Zambia, saying the country is now predictable and safe for investment.
Want to see more innovation, want you to support, if not you, your colleagues, your friends, your network partners, those who are interested in other areas. We want to see that, to bear in our economy. Because that's how I know the world works. Networks are very important. And so we want some of your colleagues, to venture in supporting the energy project, to supporting the mining projects, to supporting, as I said, agriculture, with a focus on joint ventures. Because now we have sustained it that your money is secure now. So you have to reduce your risk premiums. You need to reduce your risk premiums. And sometimes Zambia, Africa is wrongly assessed in terms of risk. We're looking at some of you to help us deal with that issue. Because, and also Africa should not be seen as one block, one country, with different countries. Give you one example here. In this country, we have no exchange controls. So why should we be classified like another country that has exchange controls? You invest your money here, you earn what you earn, you pay your tax, you repatriate what you want to repatriate. Of course, we'll encourage you to reinvest.
With debt restructured, mines revived, power expanding, and confidence returning, global investors say the country is ready for the next chapter, jobs, growth, and prosperity. Mary Kachepa, ZMBC News, State House, Lusaka.
Meanwhile, Uganda's social media restrictions have been lifted.
Kaine Rugaba says social media restrictions put in place during the election period have now been lifted. A move official says signals a return to normal life. But beyond Uganda's borders, criticism is growing. The European Union says it's concerned about human rights abuses, accusing security forces of using excessive force against opposition supporters and limiting political freedoms before and after the vote. In the United States, a Senate panel has condemned the elections and is calling for a review of sanctions against individuals linked to the alleged abuses. Lawmakers point to reports of arbitrary arrests, intimidation, and a heavy military presence during the campaign. Opposition leader Bobi Wine has accused the army of targeting him and his family. Those claims have been denied by the military chief who says reports that soldiers assaulted Bobi Wine's wife are not true. The Uganda government maintains the elections were peaceful and credible, saying security measures were necessary to keep order. But with Western partners now openly questioning Uganda's democratic record, analysts warn of possible diplomatic and economic pressure ahead. For now, the lifting of social media restrictions offers some relief at home, even as international scrutiny continues. Michael Balike, SABC News, Kampala.
Over 150 people have been abducted in the state of Kaduna in Nigeria.
Media Operations Major General Michael Onoja, in a statement, says a joint team of security personnel have been carrying out sustained and intelligence-driven operations. The assurance, according to him, follows allegations by critics that security agencies haven't been doing enough since the incident happened. The attack, which occurred last week Sunday, was initially denied by the police, who described it as falsehood by enemies of peace and conflict entrepreneurs. That got members of the community enraged and proceeded to provide a list of names of the victims as proof. Thereafter, the police admitted in a statement that the attack occurred. Kuru, meanwhile, is just one out of several communities that have suffered attacks and abductions in Kaduna State, as other parts of northwest Nigeria. In 2024, more than 200 children were abducted from their school in Chikun local government area of the state. Kaduna State Governor Uba Sani has visited Kurumin Wali and assured the locals that his administration, in partnership with security agencies, are stopping at nothing until those who have been abducted are rescued. President Bola Tinubu says his government is recruiting more personnel into the armed forces to ensure better protection of lives and property nationwide. Tasim Akende, SABC News, Jos.
Meanwhile, Chad works to protect Enedi natural and cultural reserves.
Chad sandstone. Spanning over 40,000 square kilometers lies Chad sandstone masterpiece, the Enedi Natural and Cultural Reserve. Often referred to as Enedi Massif, its cliffs, canyons, and natural archways have been sculpted by wind and water flows over millennia. Beyond its beauty, Enedi is an open book on human history, with its 9,000-year-old rock paintings that tell the story of the Sahelo-Saharan people.
This delta played a key role in the socialization of this area, as revealed today by the presence of several archaeological sites that have been identified around this zone. These include the Ripestra sites, the Habitat sites, the Paleo-Metallurgical sites, and the Lithic Activity sites.
The reserve is also a refuge for relict species, most notably the West African crocodile. However, they are under threat from human encroachment. Poaching, livestock rearing, and tree clearing for firewood is wiping out most of the region's wildlife.
This delta is a water source fed by an underground aquifer as well as a by runoff. Today, this site is home to desert crocodiles, West African crocodiles that are endangered worldwide.
Chad's government, in partnership with the African Parks NGO, has been working to reverse this decline.
We have a responsibility to monitor and manage wild animals, and at the same time we have a responsibility to create and reintroduce species that have disappeared from the reserve. As a result, we have the red-necked oryx, edax oryx, and dam gazelles, for example. We are also checking that the pastures and environments are suitable for introducing giraffes.
Enedi was listed as a UNESCO World Heritage Site in 2016, raising its global importance. Authorities hope this, along with their efforts, will secure a future for the site, for the benefits of the ecosystem, and thousands of people who rely on the reserve. Sophia Shimichero, CGTN.
Ethiopia's Addis Ababa is undergoing a major urban transformation.
5 years after its Addis Ababa means new flower, and more than 135 years after its establishment, the city is finally beginning to live up to its name. This transformation is being realized through a massive urban development initiative known as the Corridor Development Project.
Launched in 2024, the Corridor Development has given the city wider roads with modern street lighting, along with pedestrian walkways and cycling lanes. Public parks, playgrounds, toilets and parking areas are also key features of the project, which aims to make Addis Ababa a modern and livable city.
It's difficult to recognize the city again, I would say. It feels a bit like it's the Addis Ababa. So everything is completely new. The new public spaces like the parks, the playgrounds definitely increase the living standard. Also, I myself ride a bike here, so I highly appreciate the bike lanes. I go to work every day by bike, so that is also a big plus. Then I like the idea that you now can go for a stroll if you go by the big roads. It's nice to stroll along even in the evenings because it's nicely lit. I also see that I have more things to do now with my small kids than before, more playgrounds, more parks to go.
Alongside the corridor development, another groundbreaking initiative, the Riverside Development Project, is also playing a major role in transforming Addis Ababa. Covering a 56-kilometer stretch along the city's two major rivers, the project is turning once heavily polluted waterways and congested river banks into cleaner, accessible public spaces.
Here in the heart of Addis Ababa, in the Piazza area, this place once told a very different story. It was a densely crowded neighborhood marked by congestion, poor sanitation, and difficult living conditions. Today, that picture has completely changed. In less than 2 years, it has been transformed into a public park with breathtaking landscapes offering fresh air, green open spaces, playgrounds, and much more.
Tasfa Jesus Jacob, a veteran city tour guide in Addis Ababa, said the city's transformation, among other economic activities, has revitalized tourism.
Tourists who used to visit it a year before do not believe that it has been changed in such fast way. There has been tourist sites, but I can say boldly that they were not visible. They were somehow hidden. Now, through this corridor development, it has been revealed, renewed. River sites were dangerous or hazardous in the previous time. But now these days, river sites have been very, very green, and they've got bike lanes, they've got walking areas. So they have just become a new tourist attraction.
City officials say the projects have already reduced congestion, improved public health, and laid the foundation for a capital city ready to meet future demands.
The road, water, sewerage, and other related infrastructures and utilities were very poor in their development. They were inefficient, and therefore all the developments undergoing in the city are aimed to address those long standing problems of the city. The changes are very significant, and they are remarkable. For instance, when it comes to mobility, the mobility is really improved because the size of the roads are widened to accommodate more number of vehicles. Walkability in the city has been significantly increased. Very large size of permanent and temporary employment opportunities were created. And therefore, in terms of tourist attraction, in terms of our capacity to host different events, in terms of the look, the attractiveness, cleanness of the city, the smartness, and everything has improved significantly.
A transformation of this scale rarely comes without a cost. Demolitions, displacement, and in some cases, the relocation of entire neighborhoods have been part of it. But Kadir insists the process has been inclusive and smooth.
People affected by this project were fully engaged from the very beginning. First, there was effective communication with the residents and other stakeholders engaged. The second one is all data related with the human aspects were properly collected, analyzed, and the decision was made based on that data. So that data was very important for the city administration to make necessary preparation like building or preparation of different houses for development relocatives. Apart from that, should there be any complaint, there was a separate team that was fully engaged in managing complaints of residents, and that it was properly addressed.
From its historic neighborhoods to its newly built corridors, Addis Ababa is redefining itself, leaving a lasting mark on how residents live, move, and imagine their future. Beka Atoma for CGTN, Addis Ababa.
And that is a city that does not sleep, works all throughout day and night. Now, this, of course, has brought us to the conclusion of today's episode of On the Radar News Analysis. Do stay tuned for the Onkonana Dengue program brought to you by Luise Shimi. From Indafa, happy Jeju, it is goodbye. I'll see you again tomorrow, same time, same place, same radio frequency.